Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, everybody. This is Chuck Monreal, Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show. Two straight up.
The show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. Well, for those of you who are in Colorado with us, I hope everyone is digging out like we are. Winter came, winter arrived, but I guess it is December, so we can't complain about it too much.
But there is a shade a light of lightness here, because this weekend we went to watch the Vanderbilt game on TV, of course, down in Denver at Stoney's Tavern, and there are actually a couple other.
There were two other Vanderbilt fans in Colorado. For Chuck, as people may not know, is a Vanderbilt.
I'm a Vanderbilt grad, and so Vanderbilt crushed Tennessee, as it never does, in Knoxville, which it never does. So it was an amazing thing. Diego Javier,
but Chuck is happy,
is now the leading candidate. Don't tell me to hurry up. The leading candidate to be the Heisman Trophy winner, which is incredible. And we just had a great recruiting day with the top player in the country, arguably, committed to Vanderbilt. So, you know, these are sunny days for a school. Maybe back in the 1920s was great football, but I hadn't seen greatness for a long time. So.
Hey, I want to let you know, coming up later in the show, we're going to have Cody LeBlanc on. He's taking his court case to the Colorado Supreme Court regarding the leadership of the Colorado Republican Party. But want to start off with Michael Finch. We had him on it toward the end of October. He's the president of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. He was telling us about a new book that was coming out, and it is now out, A Time to Stand, The Dire Hour to Defend American Beauty. Michael, thank you once again for your time and welcome.
Hello, Michael. Good to have you back.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be back. I hope good luck digging out. I understand usually the snow melts a few days after it falls in Denver.
Sometimes.
So it'll probably be 70 degrees by the weekend. So good
That's
luck
right.
with that.
We've got 50s pushing 60 next week. Well, so tell us about your book. I mean, and why now? You call it A Time to Stand, The Dire Hour. And you talked in the last show, too, about American beauty and the need to recognize this. So just tell us about that a little bit.
Well, it is the dire hour. I think America, the left is attacking America. It's been attacking American history for a number of decades. It has worked its way through the education system to the point where our children are only learning the Howard Zinn version of American history. They're not learning about the greatness and the wonder and the beauty of American history. And in the book, I talk about a lot of things, but one of my main focuses is on American culture, the cultural history, which is an incredibly rich, fascinating, aspirational history, the art, the literature, the poetry, the architecture. And I think it's often overlooked. It's not taught in our schools. Much of what I wrote about in the book, I learned after I finished my education. So self-taught exploration. And I think, you know, culture is important because it unites us, particularly like a young country like the United States. The history and the culture were important to kind of bind us and unite us behind a common purpose. The left has been attacking that common purpose, as we know, through its attacks on American history, but also the American culture is under attack. And I think it's important that we kind of restore that. Americans want to be proud of their history. They should be. It's a beautiful history and a beautiful culture. So I wanted to kind of shine a light on the wonder and beauty of our cultural history.
Well, my sister lives over in London, and last time I was over in London, which is 20 years ago, I was talking to, you know, a Cambridge grad, usually snooty, and I said, you know, you seem to denigrate American culture. And he said, you have culture?
That is very typical
of Europeans, but yes.
Well, you know, you raise a good point because, you know, under Barack Obama, you know, you weren't supposed to like America. Michelle Obama, she's ashamed to be an American. Except when Barack got elected. You know, I mean.
And when they took lots of money in from
yeah.
and all that, she was proud of America. So that $10 million.
But capitalism. But you know, I mean, it's, I think it really kind of came to a head under that. And then it became sort of like, you know, God. You weren't supposed to talk about God, right? And you couldn't talk about anything spiritual. You couldn't say nice things about America. It was somehow, in order to be cool, you had to put down America and Americans. And I think, you know, that, you know, I hope that that's changing with younger people today. I don't know how it is.
Not in the schools, how do they do it?
Because of the teachers. So how do we get there, do you think? And was it just because the elites decided it was cool to talk down about America? And then how do we get out of it?
Well, you know, the left's attacks, you know, of course, I spent 23 years working for David Horowitz, the founder of the Freedom Center. And David, you know, who, of course, had been on that that side, he was raised a communist, a Marxist, and became a conservative. In the 1960s, you know, he knew Bill Ayers. He personally knew Bill Ayers. Bill Ayers was a terrorist, or at least his wife was a terrorist, so he's a lover of terrorists. But when the 60s kind of winded down, he went to the University of Chicago in their education school. That seems kind of strange for a former terrorist. The whole point was, and David called this the left's march through the long march through the institutions, was to teach teachers what to teach American children about America, that it's racist, it's slaveholding, sexist. Christopher Columbus came to America simply to despoil the environment and practice genocide on the Native Americans. And I'm not saying there's not faults to American history. Of course there is. We are human. But it's still an aspirational, enrich history. But the left, and again, a lot of this coalesced under, you know, one of Barack Obama's first things was he went to Cairo and apologized to the world on behalf of America. Well, we don't have anything to apologize for. You know, all of a sudden, 1776 is not the birthday of America. It's 1619 when the first slave was brought. So this self-loathing of American history that they're pushing on our younger generation is devastating because it fractures us. We're fractured already. I mean, the country's going through kind of a crisis in so many ways. To start to have this self-loathing of our own history, I think, is incredibly devastating, and we have to fight back against that.
Well, you know, I'm a history student and certainly studied Chinese history, European history, Iranian history, a lot of histories. And, you know, you always hear, well, America, especially in 1700, was a slave-owning society. And you kind of go, yeah. And so
was everyone else. Yeah.
The world at one time or the other had slave-owning societies. But I can't find another time where the group of the racial group that was enslaving the other people decided to sacrifice over 500,000 of their own blood to free from slavery. Find that one in Iranian history. Find that one in European. There is none. There is none. And that can be said time and time again for American, where we have faults and we love lots of them, but we also correct. I mean, we had a civil rights movement where people wanted to respect other people's right to vote and participate, and they were willing to march and even die for it. That's what's extraordinary. The fact that you have one group oppressing the other, if you do Marxist capitalist, you know, it's the oppressed and the oppressor. But it's what's amazing about American history is that the oppressor, in some cases, really is working hard to help decompress people. That's extraordinary. That's what's unique about American history. And it doesn't seem that the left believe. I know it doesn't. It doesn't believe that because it's to their political gain. But it really is. You know, I mean, if you taught history fairly, you know, you said, okay, let's be objective about history. It's hard to, because it's always two sides to everything. What is extraordinary about America is even why somebody like Jefferson, who had you know, children from the slave and everything, he recognized that slavery was wrong, wanted to, though he was too weak to do it, to free his slaves. The founding fathers recognized it, most of them, that slavery was wrong and it had to be getting rid of. They didn't do that in Rome. You don't find Cicero going, God, what are we going to do with our slaves? You know, I mean, we got to let these people free. No, they're going to, yeah, let's get some more. I mean, there's been no society that has actually had a humanistic streak to it that is extraordinary.
Yeah, well, you're right, Jack. I mean, slavery's existed since the beginning of time, right? It's in the Bible. It goes all the way back. Slavery has always been a part of human history. And unfortunately, very sadly, slavery still exists in parts of Africa and the Middle East and other parts of the world. But it was the churches in England that went out and ended the slave trade. They stopped the slave trade. England then was dedicated to stopping the slave trade. And then America, you're right, almost 500,000 Americans died to end slavery in this country. So, you know, we paid that great sacrifice.
It's not a half million people of the slaves who died. That's normal. I mean, there've been servile revolts in Sicily, you know, all kinds of revolts by slaves. This is where the oppressor, or half the oppressor, is fighting to free the oppressed. That's
well, we need to teach that. I mean, I think Americans, again, we can talk about the faults. And yes, we were a slaveholding nation. It was in the Constitution, but we fought to end slavery. And then we went through a long civil rights struggle. You know, I think that's where we can talk about the aspirational aspects of American history and our culture is we work to redress these sins. And we've done, I think, you know, we're not perfect. We are human. We're all flawed. But we've gone to remarkable lengths to try to correct those faults, unlike any other country in the world. I mean, the idea that the West and America is an imperialistic power, the greatest imperialistic power was the, and I'm not sure whether this is good or bad, I'm not making a judgment, the Arab Empire spread from the Arabian Peninsula, it spread all the way from Spain to the Philippines, right? That is imperialism. So, you know, that is human migration and conquering is part of human history, but somehow the West and America, all of a sudden, it becomes a great stain, even though this happens all over the world through all time, long before America existed and probably long after America. So, you know, let's recognize that. But we are the one country, and I'm sorry, I think there is an exceptionalism to America. Barack Obama said, every country, Norway is exceptional. Well, they are to Norwegians, but America is incredibly exceptional. And I think a beacon on the shining light on the hill for the rest of the world as an example in liberty and freedom and liberty. And I think we should be proud of that and teach that. We need to, the schools are a disaster. So we need to spend the time to educate ourselves, teach our children at home about the wonders of America. The Americans want to love this history. They want this country to be great. They want to recognize how beautiful it is. That's the majority. I really believe that. So, you know, we need to kind of stop this tidal wave of self-loathing, which is being pushed down our children and has been for over 50. We need to, this has started in the 1960s. This is not a recent phenomena. And look where the schools are today. It's a disaster.
Well, and I think it's changing in the popular culture a little bit to the better, right? You see now, and I go back to religion, you see now athletes frequently make the sign of a cross or point up to God, or, you know, I mean, they never used to do that, or they'll start the interview, you know, I'll praise, and you never did that. All of a sudden now, the TV networks and sports things, which I think impacts a lot of kids, you know, they're showing the flag, they're showing the national anthem, and I think under Trump, it's turning, and I think that's why the Democrats are gearing up so much with the illegal immigration, right? It's, you know, they need illegal immigration. If you are protecting American culture, then, you know, then that hurts their cause. It hurts their victimhood. And I mean, you look what's going on with the Somalis in Minnesota, right? I mean, that's a whole thing there. And supposedly one of the law enforcement officers there is telling them, oh, well, if you see ICE coming, you know, report it, you know, not the fraud, not the what's going on there, but report people trying to stop it. And I think, you know, it goes deeper than just like Barack Obama self-loathing. I think it's actually part of their strategy to maintain political power.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, kind of over, you know, the Cloward Piven plan, right? Overwhelm the system. And that's what, you know, by having a complete open border without any checks on immigration is just one of many aspects of this kind of overwhelm the system. Look, I mean, the left wants to create this perfect utopia, this heaven on earth. We know that doesn't exist, but look, we've paid that price for hundreds of years and hundreds of millions of dead trying to create this perfect world in this life. And that's what the left wants. So in order to do that, you need to destroy everything that happened before. You need to just, the Red China, the Soviet Union, Cuba, all these countries tried to destroy their past history and to create this kind of new. They're very good at destruction and tearing things down. Unfortunately, yeah, they're not very good at the building up of a society. That's where we see the hundreds of millions of dead. And we can't think that can't happen here. The left definitely has an agenda. And I think the self-loathing, the tearing apart of American history is just one part of that. Look, destroy the history, destroy the family, destroy the church. It is dire, but you know, Julie, I remain optimistic because I do believe the American we have great common sense, we have faith. I don't know if the country is getting ready for another great awakening. We've seen a couple of those in our history. That's possible. You looked at what Charlie Kirk was doing, working with young people in this country. I think there is. The left pushes so hard. Those kind of summer riots of under the George Floyd riots, you know, it started with let's take down a statue of Robert E. Lee, which I think was a huge mistake. Robert E. Lee was a great American. Yes, he fought for the Confederacy. But he's a hero in American history. In spite of those things, we need to teach about Robert E. Lee and the Confederacy. We can't wipe that clean. But by the end of the summer, they were trying to tear down statues, not just of Jefferson and Washington, who were slave owners, but Abraham Lincoln, the great emancipator. They wanted to. It never ends where it starts, right? This kind of reign of terror to tear everything. And Americans got sick of that. Americans want to be proud of that. We certainly want to be proud of Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and the great heroes of American history. So I think the left goes too far, and we're seeing kind of a pushback against that. So I'm going to remain optimistic that the majority of Americans are not going to allow this to tear down and destroy our country.
Well, and you can, some of it too is the problem the left always has is they try to make you believe stuff that you can sort of see with your own eyes, right? Like, you know, wear a mask. And well, you can tell the mask didn't work, right? I mean, all of these things they try to say, it's like a man is a woman. It's like, well, no, a man isn't a woman. And I think the same thing with America, it's an awful country. It doesn't take you very long to realize it's your book. I mean, America, number one, it's a beautiful country, right? You want snow, you got snow. You want beaches, you got beaches. And everything in between. And there is so much just natural, physical beauty in this country. And I think even kids see, you know, you have opportunity, right? You want to work here, you can work here. You want to, you know, granted, college degrees may not be what they used to. But I think that to try to tell people, no, there's no opportunity, there's no nothing, everything sucks in America, it sucks to be an American, that kind of flies in the face, I think, and I hope, of a lot of kids just sort of experience every day.
Yeah. And I think, you know, look, we need to have controlled immigration. I mean, immigration is important. We need to have legal immigration, right? But I think, you know, the left's idea that we're going to bring all these, and you're right, the Somalis in Minnesota are one of the examples of a disastrous immigration policy. But I think still the majority of immigrants that come to this country want to be American. And they're the ones who are, in some senses, can be incredibly patriotic. They embrace American history. They embrace the opportunity for opportunity to enrich their lives and take care of their families. So, you know, that even that may backfire on the left, but we certainly need to kind of close the border and control it. But again, I the common sense, Americans do not want to hate. We don't want to hate ourselves and hate our history. There is a very concentrated, very powerful minority of the left that is trying to tear down the American Republic and the system. There's no question about that. And that's what we have to fight against. But we have the numbers. I think we have common sense and the good faith. We also have a person in the White House and Donald Trump, who recognizes these attacks, not just on Make America Great with the economy and the military, but he understands that American history and culture are very important. He attacked the Smithsonian a few months ago for being so woke. And he said, stop teaching only the bad about American history. You need to teach the beauty and the good of American history. So we have someone in the bully pulpit who understands this. We have, you know, the people on our side to fight this. But, you know, again, we can't relent because the left is never going to give up. Right. We're never going to win this war. We can only win battles and hold them back.
Well, and how do we do, as you said, I mean, if the schools aren't doing it, I guess it kind of goes, number one, buy your book. Yeah. So you can do that.
Step one.
But also, as you said, it's important to teach it at home, to talk about it at home. I mean, what are some other things that, you know, that you, when you say, you know, it's a dire hour to defend, what are some other steps people, you know, you think can do to take that defense?
Well, I think, you know, public schools, you know, obviously the public education K through 12 and many of the public universities are owned by the taxpayer, right? We pay for the public schools. So I think conservatives and Republicans kind of need to get a backbone on this and force through the schools, you know, changes in curriculum. Again, I'm not saying you don't teach the faults of American history, but it needs to be balanced. It can't be so. The schools have turned into indoctrination centers for the American left to destroy this country. So, look, they understand, and as communists have for, you know, 200 years, that in order to change society, to change man, to change, you know, the new Soviet man, is you have to reach the children. You know, Hitler understood that as well. Reach the children. If you're going to corrupt a society to create a new society, you need to reach the children. That's why they went through the education system for the last 60 years to kind of, you know, bend children to this kind of new world that they're envisioning. We need to fight back on that, force through curriculums in public schools, which with, you know, local school boards, even state legislators. It's not going to happen in California, obviously, but it could happen in other states. Force these things through to...
Not going to happen.
Probably
we just had an election in which there were, I don't know, dozens.
Well, it can happen. You know, it's got to start somewhere, right? I mean, you know, conservatives created like at, you know, certain schools in Kansas, they created a Center on American Studies. And the whole, this was kind of a Bob Dole idea. The whole idea was to teach about the wonders of America through the University of Kansas. But inevitably what happens is then they turn over the instruction over to the left, and the left, and you know, you guys, I don't know if you've ever had Victor Davis Hanson on your show, but hire someone like Victor Davis Hanson to hire all of the professors in these centers, right? The left controls 99%. You know, create a center, and I guarantee you, children will flock to these centers to study and learn. So, but we need to be forceful. And it's, look, changing education in America is like, you know, it's pushing the boulder up the mountain. There's no question. But we can certainly start educating at home. Do not rely on the public schools to teach your children. You have to do this at home. So then when your children hits these indoctrination camps, at least they have this background and this knowledge where they can kind of have the discussion and they can lean on that upbringing where you've taught them the wonders of American history. And it's a beautiful story. It's an entertaining and fun story. I think we can make that. Look, there's nothing quite like American history. It is an incredible. You talked about how beautiful the land is. You know, teach again about Davy Crockett, Daniel Boone, and George Washington, all of those things that as children, I think the three of us probably learned about those things. I'm not sure they're learning about those things and those great people anymore. We need to bring that back.
Well, what I think we need to do is first teach them Russian history. And you know, you go from Slaughterfest to Slaughterfest, despot to despot, oppression to oppression. It is incredibly depressing to study Russian history. I mean, there are very few, if any, bright spots in it. And you kind of go, good, study that objective. Then come to United States history, and you'll find it's not just you're choosing just the good. It is that America does have an extraordinary amount of good to it, along with the bad. But it does have an extraordinary amount of good to it, which is not, you know, the average in a lot of societies.
Yeah, that would be nice if, the Russians certainly have kind of a checkered history. But you can also, if you're Russian, you can learn about the great music, the great writers. They've Dostoevsky, Tolstoy. So look, every country culture, I mean, the Russians are very proud of their literary culture, and they should be. These are incredible writers, incredible musicians, right? So you know, every country has something. Why don't we accentuate some of them? We have many, not just some things, many. The great British historian Paul Johnson recognized American, you know, a European and an Englishman recognized American landscape painting in the 19th century as one of the greatest periods of art, not just in American history, but in world history that doesn't have a second, right? So there are people out there, but we don't even recognize that ourselves, this incredible cultural history. It's important. So we need to rediscover that, and Americans, take to the road, go see the beautiful land, check out the paintings, the beautiful architecture. Almost every state in this country has a beautiful state capitol. Those were built along classical lines for a purpose. So you can look up at the Capitol in Denver and say, wow, that is impressive, right? Or Madison, Wisconsin, wherever you live. There's a reason for that. Again, to unite us into this great kind of idea of democracy and a republic. So let's be proud of that, and let's show our children that and teach them about the greatness of American history.
Well, so where can folks get your book?
You can get Time to Stand. Here it is. You can get it on Amazon, of course, and Barnes & Noble's, all the regular websites. Also, again, I'm with the Freedom Center, the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Our flagship website is frontpagemag.com. You can go to frontpagemag.com, read some great articles edited by the great Jamie Glassoff, of course. Go to the bookstore, and you can order the book, but you can also go through Amazon. So again, I encourage people to, if you can read my book and grab a couple things out of the book that lead you down a path of rediscovery of American greatness in our history, then I'll feel like I've accomplished something in writing the book. So that's my goal, to get people to kind of go down these paths to learn, again, rediscover the greatness, the American beauty in our history.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you both. Have a great day. Good luck digging out.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you.
All right. That's Michael Finch's new book, A Time to Stand, The Dire Hour to Defend American Beauty. You know, it's interesting when he was speaking and you were talking about the Russian history. To quote Sundance from the Conservative Treehouse again, he spent or has spent a lot of time in Russia. And he talks about, you know, where they refer to that as the motherland. Mm-hmm. And he said they have a very different relationship with the country, right? I mean, it's different than the government, right? It's the country. He said there is a true, deep, and abiding love of the country there, you know. And I think you're right. Somehow, you know, there may not be a true and deep, abiding love of the Putin, right? But I think that's
he's fairly popular.
Right. But I mean, it was interesting. And he was saying there's nothing like that in the United States. No. And he said that's why. And he was kind of referring how come in Ukraine, how come Russia's going along with it. And he said, but there is just this very nationalistic. Yeah. And I think, you know, if you want to be a globalist national elite, the first thing you need to do is get rid of the whole idea of countries in the first place. Right. Right? Mm-hmm. And that so your country can't be special if you can't have a country at all. The world is special. Right. Even though they're backing away on all the climate change and things like that. And, you know, and I just want to say, this is just an aside before we get to Cote LeBlanc here. It's like, it was driving me insane, all of the left-leaning weather forecasters who were going on and, oh, it's the second longest in the history of the universe that Denver hasn't had snow, blah, 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 blah. Well, thank you very much. Now we have like 6 inches out here. Mother Nature evens out. It's like, you know, they had to take back. Did they have a climate change paper? They just had to like redact.
They
buried it, right? So it's again that. It's like, oh, we're all screwing something up. That's why it's not snowing. It's like, no, it just wasn't snowing because it wasn't snowing. And now it snowed quite a bit. And it's the second most snowfall we've had in 2025. So there, right?
Which is
balanced out 2025. We've got Cote LeBlanc coming on at 3:30. Cody, as you know, is a grassroots warrior, and he had filed a lawyer. And apparently we'll have to ask him this. The Supreme Court clerk said, oh my God, this is impressive.
Yeah, shut your own pro se firm.
Yeah. Basically suing Britta Horn for refusing to recognize that the State Central Committee voted to opt out of the open primary, and the State Central Committee fired her personal attorney, Klenda, who's running up literally tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal bills. And he filed the lawsuit. The judge dismissed the lawsuit. We talked about this a little bit on the last show, not weighing in on the merits of either side, really.
Cody explain it to you.
Well, I'll have him just real quick because we've got time because he's not here. But Cody then appealed it. Basically, the judge said, I'm not weighing in on the merits. I'm just saying I don't have jurisdiction, which Cody makes some really good arguments that he does. In the meantime, Jacob, I wonder if the DOJ responded to Griswold's letter. So that's referring to the Department of Justice has asked secretaries of state all over the country to give the federal government the unredacted voter registration files so they can maybe take a look at them, take people off who are dead, take people off or on other roles, or at least make it known. I think I don't think the federal government can take them off, but they could
They can set up a system that allows them to get off.
Right, exactly. And Jenna Griswold said, like, literally take a hike. I don't know that the Justice Department has responded, but I think Trump said he won't give us the SNAP benefits if they don't. I think that's what he said, or at least he's saying that. He goes, okay, I'll withhold federal funds then. And then Jared Polis will scream and holler. But here's the thing, Jenna Griswold can't afford to give it up, right? It's so corrupt. I think the voter registration files in Colorado. And that if they give it up and people realize how bad it is, who knows? It's a Democrat-controlled state. But
Ken Buck will realize it's a gold standard.
It's a gold standard.
What happened to Ken Buck? Anybody seen him? He seemed to have thankfully disappeared from the
world. You can go be on MS now that it's not MSNBC anymore. I was reading an interesting thing. I don't watch it, so I didn't notice, but apparently Joe and Mika have been like hardly ever on. It's like they were on like a together, it's like since May, a total of like 14 times together. Yeah. But now that the new company has taken over, they've been on for 3 weeks straight.
Yay!
So no, I haven't missed them really,
but oh well.
Hey, and I see Cody is here. Cody, if you want to go ahead and unmute yourself and turn your camera on or not, depending on if your camera
is. Right, everybody wants to see you.
Are you there?
I am. Sorry about that.
No, no worries. No worries. So I was explaining the case got dismissed but by the judge, but that is certainly not the end of it. And you filed an extremely impressive, lengthy appeal to the Colorado Supreme Court. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, the original judge did go ahead and dismiss the case, which, you know, one way or the other, we all knew it was an option. And I know there's some people that believe that even what the judge decided was that we didn't have standing in this case. Well, he didn't really even order that.
No.
What he decided to dismiss the case on was mainly over the interpretation of the Lowry decision, a case from back, 1903, I think. That means, and what it decided was that large political parties in the state of Colorado, the court doesn't get to decide controversies. So controversies are decided at the body. So the Colorado Republican Central Committee, the Assembly, anything like that. What he fails to follow through on is that Lowry does allow for the enforcement piece. And right. So that is what this this appeal to the Supreme Court is focused on, is that we're not asking them to decide a controversy, because the controversy has already been decided 3, 4, 5, 23 times by now. And from there, it's just asking them to enforce it. Because what do you have if you don't have... if you have a chair that's not going to do the will of the body, you have no recourse. If the courts aren't going to do it, if the body, the bylaws require what? 2/3 of the body to remove a chair. But we're also bound by the timelines that are outlined in the state election laws. So by October,
saying screw you to everybody else. We opted out. She's like, I don't care. We fired Clenda. We have nobody else. She's like, I don't care. I don't care. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, the court. Yeah. I mean, from what I understand, so your argument, which seems like to me like a very good one, is we're not asking the court to decide, you know, should we opt out, shouldn't we opt out, should we fire Clenda, shouldn't we? We already did that. The controversy was we opted out, we fired Clenda. The problem is Britta is refusing to acknowledge it. And what other recourse do you have if that's going on?
Exactly. And so aside from that, we're arguing that the judge, he declined jurisdiction on the matter, which I guess is somewhat of the you don't have standing argument.
If standing is often referred to the parties themselves as opposed to the court. Court says, I don't have jurisdiction. It's not that you didn't have standing to bring the lawsuit. The court is saying, we don't have jurisdiction to hear it, which is a slightly different
concept.
Yeah, and it really does make a difference here. So the judge says that he didn't have jurisdiction based off of 113, which is the election code specifically for this. And so where he does is it specifically states, let me just read it here, when an official commits or is about to commit a breach or neglect of duty under the election code, that is when the judge can step in, which Britta did. By failing to notify and refusing to notify, she failed and neglected her duty. And then we also go on a couple of others, but the main one that I wanted to bring focus to is the First Amendment associational rights. This is something that we've talked about for years in the opt-out movement, but it also matters here. We have the right to associate or not to associate. We have the right to choose what church we go to, what political party we're a part of. The party itself has a right to structure and govern itself And that means very little if its own final decisions cannot be enforced, whether that's through the body or through the judicial system. So we've got quite a few different arguments that we're fighting in the appeal. And I'm hopeful that it goes forward. From what I understand, the Supreme Court meets on Thursdays to review some cases and decide if they're going to take them or not. So we should hopefully find out here in a couple of weeks.
Do they move that fast usually, Chuck, or will they let
for 113? It's kind of a unique kind of process.
Okay.
You only have a couple of days, 3 days to appeal. They have to, to respond. It's meant to be this very expedited process. Normally, it would not be, but a 113 case is very quick.
And my read through too, Cody, I want to point something else out, because I think we need to remind people that the party under Britta Horn, by her own acknowledgement, is broke. She's had to take out, she calls it a revolving line of credit. But, I mean, that's a loan, basically. It's money that she has to pay back at interest because she said she does not have the money coming in to be able to pay for the basic expenditures. And Clenda is owed hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees.
Did you get to talk to your good friend, Mr. Clenda, about the appeal?
So just on the note of Clenda, so he's actually the way that I found out that our case was dismissed. So because I'm not an attorney and we're doing this pro se, we don't have access to the online filing systems. For transparency's sake, the courts closed last Wednesday at noon, for the holiday. They close at noon on Wednesdays anyways, but then they were closed Thursday and Friday for Thanksgiving. At almost 7 o'clock on Wednesday night is when the judge issued the dismissal order. So Clenda emailed me on Friday, and I don't know if he reached out to anybody else. I haven't heard from anyone else that he was doing the same thing he did the last time, threatening to sue and wanting my opinion on if he filed a motion for attorney's fees, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So I sent him back a very nice little let me pull it up here really quick while we're talking. But the here it is. So I said, Mr. Clenda, there will be an appeal to this decision. Moreover, the district court issued a dismissal on a 12B1 basis, and his motion to dismiss was on a 12B5 basis, and that was ignored. In fact, the district court's order acknowledged that the issue raised in the complaint were bona fide controversies under 13106, which certainly undercuts a large portion of your original dismissal motion argument. This being obvious, you are well aware the district court has not positioned itself to award any fees or damages with this dismissal order. You would be unnecessarily risking the expenditure of the central committees, who did fire you, money, while wasting the district court's time. If you proceed to seek fees and damages, then plaintiff's response will likely include seeking sanctions against you. Cody.
Your friend and buddy boy.
And yes, this is important because it seems right now that Britta's sole fundraising options
is you
seeking attorney
all the money that you're worth.
Seeking attorney's fees for all of these lawsuits she's got us involved in. And at my read too of this is that the court didn't specifically deny that, but the court did not say, oh, this is a frivolous, vindictive, malicious lawsuit by Cody. You know, this is ridiculous. I mean, the court, if you're Clenda, you have to take this and be like, there's no attorney's fees coming here. And so
he can always hope.
He can keep hoping, but as you said, you know, meanwhile he's fired, and to me it's like, hey, you were fired, so anything you're doing at this point, I mean, it'd be like if I was fired by like one boss and another boss said, oh no, keep coming in, I would be like, well, I want to see my paycheck, you know what I mean? At a certain point you're like, but I you know, I'm
well, if you're luckily Clinda does not have partners who
yeah.
are going bonkers right now. He's just facing his own financial Armageddon by constantly billing up hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees, which if a different group takes over, they're going to go, you were fired.
Right.
We're not paying you a penny.
Well, and Chuck, you bring up an interesting point there that I know we've talked about, and I just want to remind the listeners, this isn't the first time Britt has done something like this. When she was the Route County treasurer, she got into a pissing match with the commissioners and then turned into legal battles after legal battles. And then she hired her good friend, Steve Clenda, to represent her as the treasurer, paid for by the Route County taxpayers. She had a $5,000 budget for external attorneys. they kept asking, are you going to go over that? Will you go over that? She kept saying, no, absolutely not. And then they slapped him with a $100,000 bill to Steve Klenda. And this was back when he was partners with Scott Gessler as well, which, I mean, you know, two birds, same stone.
And what's good is, and as you said, it's not the first time Britta's been financially ridiculous like this. It's also not the first time she's ignored what the body has said. We had Ray Garcia present a petition to hold a special meeting, and they jumped through all these hoops and to ignore it. She's continuing to ignore it. And she's made it clear.
Well, you also have to understand, because I want kind of all the news articles at one time. So she got in a battle with every county commission, everyone.
In Rob County.
She got into a big fight with the county attorney. And she got in a fight with all our employees who sued her.
Yeah.
And so she's managed to replicate that one by having her vice chair quit, have her secretary treasurer quit, to have a new secretary treasurer who's calling everybody greasy.
Slimy F-words.
F-words and so forth. She's doing another tremendous job, as the establishment knows how to pick them.
Well, I mean, we've talked about this too, but the establishment seems to be crumbling in front of our very eyes. I mean, she can't keep even the volunteer staff that she has. I mean, Nancy Pelosi from Jefferson County, chief rhino in charge over there. I mean, she was a volunteer, basically full-time staffer for the state party under Britta's leadership. And then all of a sudden, she's no longer there. Heidi Ganahl was another one. She was on board. And then all of a sudden, persona non grata. I mean, Britta cannot run an organization. She doesn't have the skills. And that's been evident through this whole process. So, I mean, circling back over to this case, we have an opportunity, whether the court hears it or not, that we have to keep moving forward. And the piece, the call to action or cry that I'd have for our central committee is that they pay attention to this. If Klenda decides to come after myself or any of the other plaintiffs on the case,
That'd be me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you, Julie. I mean, all the CRC has to do, you have to just pull a petition for a special meeting. Now, whether or not Britta hears the
right
calls the meeting, but you just call for a special meeting and you vote to dismiss their motions. I mean,
right.
They're the body. He is suing on behalf of the central committee who fired him.
Right. And,
I mean, that's the piece that just.
And who is also now? It's like, so you're right. It's like the central committee, of which I'm a member, fired him. And now, I mean, so before he wants to try to get attorney's fees from me for firing him. And I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. And I go back to the reason this matters, and I want folks to understand this. It's not just, you know, divisiveness or a fight. We have state assemblies and caucuses coming up. We're going to be selecting our 2026 candidates.
Maybe.
And Britta insiders, people who know, say she has made zero plans. And even if she had any plans, she can't pay for it.
It's hard to make plans. I mean, we talked to some of the people who put the plans together and 2 years ago, and they started a couple months ago, and they said, you know, we had to start from the beginning because the KBB didn't help and everything else. But they said, you know, we managed to do it, but if we had no money, we couldn't have done it.
The caucus and assembly, I keep saying that's the heart and soul of the Colorado. If you're not going to have caucus and assembly, if Britta is somehow going to sink that, right, which we've talked about this before. I think some of the rhinos, that's what they want. But, I mean, there is no point. So we can't, like you said, we can't just say, oh, well, Britta's a mess. We'll just wait for 2 years and we'll elect somebody else. There may not be anything to elect anyone to in 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, especially if people like Barb Kirkmeyer get her way. I mean, she's put forward bills to get rid of the caucus and assembly process altogether. Yeah. Because she knows that she'd never win if she had to go that way. She might run. She might win if she ran as a Democrat, because maybe they'd vote for her. But, that's where this whole thing goes back to, though, is the fundraising piece. I mean, since Britta was elected, I mean, they came in chanting and hollering about how much money they'd bring, and they had the support and backing of this, that, and the other. Well, where is it? Because to your point, I mean, I seem to be the only fundraising tool that they have is to blast me out there, which, I mean, I'm happy to do, too. Help us and go to Colorado Doge, COLODoge.com, and donate there to help with the fight. But
Here's what I would say too is, I mean, I don't know exactly, you know, you're not an attorney, so obviously you don't have necessarily billable hours, and your time and your efforts certainly are valuable. But I imagine you were able to do this for essentially the filing fee, mm-hmm. whereas Claudette, God knows,
it's thousands of dollars, he's
going to charge a party to do what you probably did for a few hundred bucks, right?
I mean, I can tell you the first suit cost $260 to file, and this one, the appeal, was $150 to file. So, I mean, it's not an exorbitant amount there. And so that's where I look at what Clemda's billing him for, and I said, what the heck for? And look at, I mean, Eric Grossman and I, when from that suit earlier this year, we racked up, I think, about $18,000-$19,000 in attorney fees in those short couple of months. What did Glenda do during that same time? I mean, everything was already done, and Britta walked in the door, and there was already a bill for $90,000 from Glenda. I mean, that's where I'm sitting here going, okay, even paying an actual attorney and good attorney, it only cost us $19,000. Now you're wanting to do this? I don't understand.
Well, I understand. I think that somebody's cash cow, right? I think Britta's plan was to raise money to pay off all of her cronies. She had her $2.4 million budget, right? Well, that collapsed, but Kalenda's like, he's not going anywhere. And
well, to have a cash cow, the cow's got to be able to produce milk or cash. You got a sterile cow who can't produce anything. So what he's doing is building up a pyramid of legal bills.
And what does that do to the long-term success of the organization? And PRC needs to be asking itself. Because, I mean, I, again, don't know the answer to this, but if he, say Britta runs up $500,000 in bills to him, can he send the Colorado Republican Party to collections when a new chair is elected? At some point, is the Colorado Republican Party going to have to file bankruptcy because of Britta?
It can't. That's a really interesting part. It can't. There's
exactly.
No condition in theory anyway, it is an entity that doesn't have a corporate shield. So maybe every Republican in Colorado would owe.
An affiliated voters real quick there. Well, and you know, and here's the thing, and it damages the future of the party because again, who would want to take over that? Right? Yeah. You're going to enter this mire. So, well, let me call you before we wrap up because you've done. I imagine do all the clerks know you in all these courtrooms now? And I think you're a hero to them.
Well, I will tell you, we had down in Arapahoe County, I made friends with one of the clerks. He was just the most entertaining guy, very liberal, very, very much hated the Republican Party. And so he was just thrilled that I was suing the Colorado Republicans. And so he'd do anything he could help. But down at the Supreme Court, I mean, they've been great, great help. You walk in. It's a lot nicer at the Supreme Court than it is at the district courts. And there's not the lines, but everybody, when they reviewed the filing that I took in on Monday, I mean, the comment was they don't get a lot of pro se filings. They also don't get a lot of 113 motions in front of them. And so when she was piecing through it, she had to go get the chief clerk to make sure everything was there. And she said she has attorneys that bring things in that don't have everything documented. And I won't take full credit for it. I mean, I have a lot of help and people in the background that I know I can bounce questions off of and ask for guidance on, should I phrase it this way or this way? And so it is a powerful team that we've established over here on the conservative side. And it may be my name on there, but it's a fight for every last grassroots patriot in Colorado.
All right. But Cody, before we let you go, one more time, because as you said, even though you did this one on the cheap, legal fees do add up. So we're
going to have legal fees. Just help them on the $150.
Right.
Well, we still owe our attorney from the last one. So,
another time. Okay, sure.
So I just put it in the chat here for those on Zoom, but it's colodoge.com. I believe if you Google Colorado Doge, there's another group that's using our name now too, but
so don't go to that.
So make sure you don't use that. It's colodoge.com.
All right.
And we're getting ready to put up the full filing on the website. So if you want to read through, the appeal, please go over and take a look there.
All right.
All right. Well, best of luck on the one, and I guess we'll hear
Yeah,
a
keep
relatively
us posted,
quick
okay?
one. See you from there.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Hey, bye,
Take
Cody.
Care.
Best pro se lawyer in the history of Colorado. Hey, and that is going to do it for us today. We're going to go dig out now. Thank you to Michael Finch, to the great guys at BBS Radio, everybody on Zoom. We will see you.
Chips at sea, everybody.
Everybody.
We want to thank everybody.
We will see you all on Monday.
Take care.